Welcome to the Dropping Lines podcast. This is the Two Cents Show. I'm your host, Rodrigo, but you can call me Rod. And I'm here along with the Cent Master, Evans. How are you doing, man?
Good, man. Just had a quick workout earlier, getting pumped for our special guest today.
Speaking of our special guest, we're beyond excited and honored to welcome a very special guest on the show today, because our guest resume is jaw-dropping and awe-inspiring. If you're listening to this podcast, chances are that at some point in your life, you have picked up a Slam or Hoop magazine and read one of his articles, or maybe you've heard him on TSN Radio, on CBC, or Raps Unpublished, or maybe you've watched NBA XL on TV, and you've probably heard of the Crown League and Hoop Club TO, and most recently, and we really hope you're subscribed to one of his latest projects, That Nick Life. Here, Dropping Dimes family, joining us is producer, director, writer, podcaster, analyst, and storyteller, the one and only Dwayne Watson. Welcome to the show, Dwayne. How are you?
Wow. What an intro. You guys, I'm glad I sent you that Bitcoin because you got the intro right, man.
Nice.
No, honestly, guys, I'm really happy to be here, man. I'm glad to be joining the Dropping Dimes fam today and talking my talk, man.
We're very excited, and we appreciate your time. We're going to ask you some questions to get you to know a little bit better. Obviously, getting to know you a little bit better on the basketball terms. Then we're going to, you know, ask you how you ended up with involving so many projects. We have some questions about Crown League, the Raptors, about Nick, which I've been happy and lucky to have been part of a couple of discussions now. And then we have a bit of fun lightning round to get you to answer some hard-pressing questions.
I'm ready. Let's go, man.
All righty. So let's start to getting to know Dwayne Watson, and I'm gonna wind back the clock a little bit here. So, okay. Dwayne, how did basketball make its way into your life?
Man, that's a really interesting question, and it's funny because for me, I had this slow incline in terms of my love and appreciation for the game. But I wasn't like, you know, when I was a little kid, I loved basketball and I was playing all the time. But my brother, who passed away 6 years ago, was a big influence where he played a lot. He inspired me a lot, and I used to play with him a lot. And that's kind of what really developed my passion for the game, where more so playing. Like, I really started playing a lot, more so than following it. Like, I wasn't as concerned about, like, the NBA, but I definitely had appreciation for playing the game, and I was tall at a young age. So that's where it started.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely different because a lot of people start watching TV first, and then because of that, they start playing. But with you, it's the other way around. You started playing, and then later on, catching up on everything.
Yeah, like, sports wasn't a big – I mean, my mom is actually – in terms of getting into sports, my mom will watch NBA, NFL, baseball, curling, golf, CFL. Awesome. She watches, like, everything. Nice. She was, like, really a big reason in terms of how I got interested in watching sports, because she was always into it. So, but you're right, though. It was different where it wasn't like, you know, I saw Jordan, I was like, I want to go recreate that. I mean, that happened later, but I definitely got into it. My brother was the influence there.
Nice.
So when growing up, did you have a favorite team, or were you kind of just going cheering for players?
No, definitely. I mean, growing up, because I'm old, the Lakers Showtime, that was my squad, man.
Oh, yes. That's Rod's jam.
Finally, we have a guest that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, like, Showtime was, I think especially, like, if you're, like, getting into basketball, visually, like, you know, no look passes, the transition play, you had Kareem with the hooks. So all those things were really, and of course, I mean, they were winning a lot of games. And also, too, back in the day, you weren't getting, like, you know, the luxury of watching. You had to watch whatever the key matches were on NBC, you know what I mean? Like, so Lakers, are, you know, there's, like, probably four teams you're seeing, right? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think the Lakers definitely, in terms of how they kind of, like, really took hold of the league at that time. And not that I stopped being a Lakers fan, but I think then I started, like, being less about teams and definitely more about players. And that kind of evolved from there. So I always rate the Lakers, but then also, like, it's evolved to, like, the Raptors being a Toronto guy. Like, they're my team. Sure. So that's kind of how it flowed.
It's hard to become a hardcore fan unless you – I mean, I have my character, I like to call it, that is a diehard Lakers fan, but – you know, I'll watch a Hornets versus Bucks game and still be happy about it. So I definitely understand what you say when, you know, it's hard to be just fan of one team when there are another 29 that, you know, you'll still enjoy watching them play.
And also, you know what kind of ruined it for me too? Fantasy basketball. Because when you're playing fantasy, you begin to care about the players that you have as opposed to and the team and stuff, whatever. So that was really interesting in terms of like you really obviously get it deeper. For me, actually going back, I remember like Hoops like came up with a set of basketball cards, and me and my friends we all bought them. And like, of course, you know, you always want the Jordans and the Duncans and the great guys, but then you always get the lesser guys too. Yeah. That kind of really helped me in terms of like learning like the players in the league, right? So it's like, I'm not only knowing the starting five, but I know like, you know, all these like bums with the funny names.
Yeah, you're reading their stats, seeing how bad they do.
Right? Yeah, so it's like, so that kind of really kind of helped expand my knowledge of like the NBA beyond like just the stars.
Nice. So that's a great segue because, you know, obviously we all know the Magic, the Jordans, the Birds, but since you've got to learn about all these other lesser names and the least popular players, do you have a favorite player growing up that maybe wasn't one of the superstars in the league?
That's a good question. It's challenging because by knowing all these guys, you don't get to see them because like, let's say, you know, the Denver Nuggets, I'm not getting to see Nuggets games like back then per se, right? But in terms of like a lesser known player who I'm really intrigued with, and he was actually in the set of Hoops cards, he was a rookie, his name was Ricky Barry. He was on the Sacramento Kings.
Oh, no way. Yeah.
Shooting guard. I think he made all NBA second team for rookies. And you know, the Kings sucked back then as they do now. except for, you know, that little run with the Lakers. But he actually had killed himself after his first season. Whoa. So it was like, it was crazy because it's like, and it was funny because he was really hard. Huh. He was a really hard card to find, right?
Right.
So it's like, why is this guy so hard to find? And then to find, you know, he had, I think he averaged 13 points in the rookies, you know, 5 assists, 5 rebounds. He was decent, right?
Yeah.
But he had like, I think there was some, now obviously, you know, like where mental health is definitely more prevalent, there's some mental health things, and he had an argument with his wife and he took his own life, which was kind of crazy. Wow. So that really kind of always intrigued me because this guy was good. And then after one season, boom, he was gone. So
just lost it.
Yeah, that's tragic. Yeah.
Sorry to get so grim there, guys.
No. I mean, that's a really good story. I mean,
yeah.
How, you know, the other day, I mean, completely going on a tangent, but I was on a business trip once and there was a one of those shows, like criminal shows, was, I can't remember, it's Criminal Files, you know, clearly recorded in, clearly recorded in the 80s because of the graphics that were on the show. And they said that they caught this, apparently it was a famous case, but I've never heard about twins that killed their parents in the States because they appeared in a basketball card at a Knicks game. And I forgot the last name of the twins, but the whole thing is they caught him that they were lying because they were on that basketball card. And then that just, I went down on a spot like, I wonder, you know, how many people are on basketball cards that, you know, have a weird story and whatnot.
I think, I don't know the story fully, but I think Mark Jackson was the card because I remember seeing
Mark Jackson. Yeah.
Mark Jackson was the card and they're in the background, which is kind of crazy, but it's funny how basketball kind of finds a way in all these different places, right?
Mm-hmm. Maybe I should write an article about, you know, the obscure world of basketball cards.
Yeah. I mean, that's an idea.
So from playing and like learning about these players, was there a kind of like a specific player you try to model your game after or playing style that you identified with?
I think my playing style's kind of evolved over time. I mean, I'm 6'3", so I'm like a post player for the most part, playing inside.
Yeah.
Obviously, when you're the bigger guy, that's, you're automatically designated, that's where you got to be.
Yeah.
So,
it's not funny. Anymore, though.
Well, that's the story.
Here we go.
Here we go. I used to do a little skyhook back in the day too. So I mean,
oh nice.
But like your influence, the Kareem influence.
Yeah, but for me, like, you know, I think every big man wants to be a point guard, right? So it kind of evolved where like Kevin Garnett was probably the first player who I really was like, you know, like wanting to be like this guy because I felt like KG, like Timberwolves KG. Because, you know, he could score, he could rebound, he could block shots, he could set up his teammates, he was getting triple-doubles. And I love that, you know, he kind of was like, kind of like a precursor to like the big men now where they do so many different things. Sure. And I really wanted to kind of be that guy where like, I don't want to be the traditional big man, but I want to set guys up. I want to stretch out. I want to like make plays. So that kind of like evolved in that point. That kind of evolved my game to that point where I would try and do more than that. And now, just because, I don't know. I mean, I think I definitely see myself more as a, I definitely try and be a facilitator more. I really enjoy like setting up with people, whatever, right? And like, I think being older, and it sounds like super lame, but the basketball IQ, I think, what happens is I've got to be able to compete, right? And my basketball IQ is the edge I'm going to have over younger, quicker guys and understanding the game. So I think like when you understand the game like that, it's really easy. You can see like, if you just cut here, this guy's trying to block you. Just cut, and it's a layup. So I think I'm really in this place where I'm trying to like set people up. So nice. It's kind of changed.
You've seen like the scenarios over and over again, so you sort of know how to
play. Yeah, right. It's like people. Baby, adult, old man. Yeah. Life.
Nice.
Yeah, you go from young hot gun trying to score all the points, more of a facilitator later on, and mentor, and also trying to get less contact in the game. Like I'm smarter than that now.
I
know where to.
Yeah. Hey, but if we need buckets, I can get them. Don't forget, I can still get it when needed. But I'm definitely going to be.
There you go. Yeah.
No. Nice. Yeah.
Dwayne, so off the air, we were talking about your basketball books in the back, so our question is: do you have most prized basketball possession? So not necessarily a jersey, but something else that you think is very prized in your
opinion. Okay, so I have two. And one is kind of like inconsequential. It's just like a personal memento, but, and of course I knew this question was coming. So, I don't know if
there we go.
I don't know if you, back in the day when they used to have like Hoop It Up 3-on-3.
Yeah.
So when it first came to Toronto, myself and my best friends, so my best friends from high school are still my best friends to this day. And, we all played ball and we went in this 3-on-3 tournament and it was like, the whole city playing in it and we ended up winning it. So, and it was just like, I think you guys play. You guys know how the game kind of like forges friendships and like that camaraderie and stuff, whatever. Sure. And it was just like kind of like, and we also played together in high school. We never won anything. So that was kind of like our big victory. Nice. So my wife always tries to throw it out, but it's like, that's never going to happen. So that was a really big thing. And then the second thing is pretty big. I mean, I can't take credit. I didn't contribute to it, but the Raptors championship ring.
Ooh.
Oh, that's a really good one.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, like I said, I wasn't on the court. I wasn't making trades. But, being around the team, doing media around the team and kind of being a part of that run was, like, an incredible experience.
I noticed it said sweets on the side of that.
It does say sweets on the side of that.
What's the story behind that? I hear that might be your nickname.
Yeah, man. It's sweets is my nickname, which is – I've had that for, a long, long time. I have a sweet tooth.
Did it come from being on the court? Oh, that's all it was?
No. Just candy? Yeah. Literally candy, right? I do try and change the story. Say, I'm sweet on the court. That's where it came from. But, so that's – and what's kind of funny because it really, really stuck. And, like, people just call me that all the time. And it's funny. I never really call myself that. I don't refer to myself as sweets, but, like, a lot of people do. And some people only know me as sweets, which is kind of funny as well. But, it's just kind of stuck, man.
But those are the good nicknames, but the ones that are – given, not the ones that I come up with. I guess the only one from fairly recent memory that I can think of is Kobe calling himself Vino, and that sort of stuck for a while. Or himself, Kobe naming himself the Black Mamba. But I think only Kobe, maybe MJ, those kind of AAA type personalities are the ones that can pull off. Like, yeah, you're all gonna call me this starting tomorrow.
Okay, so I I'm a believer in that you can't give yourself a nickname.
I agree. Definitely. It has to come.
It's like I'm gonna call myself the greatest. It's gotta be
it's gonna come naturally too. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And I don't like the whole, Dwayne Watson's name is D Watson. D Watts. Like that's not a nickname. All those like little like that's not a nickname.
So you're not a fan of the CP3, the PG-13.
Well, CP3 works because it's his initials and three, but like,
and it rhymes, yeah.
Who is like, I don't know, like, I mean, like anyone where they take the first part of their name and it's like Kalo, like, I'm sorry, Kyle Lowry, Kalo is like not a nickname. It's just like taking his letters, right?
Yeah.
That's true.
So
doesn't sound like his name at all.
Right. And then he spelled with an E and I'm like, where did that come from?
Oh God, no,
that's forcing it.
But, yeah. So I mean, I don't mind Easy Money Sniper, but no one really calls him that except for himself, like Kevin Durant, right? I mean, KD works. CP3 is like a nickname, but yeah, I just think like people should kind of like knight you with your name, like, you know what I mean? Like, okay, I'm gonna call you. I can't come up with someone off the top of my head.
Well, sweets is good.
Appreciate that
for basketball.
Co-sign.
We do need. I can totally see. You know, those. I've never saw them in person, but you know, through the magic of internet, those 80s, 90s posters of NBA players with their nicknames, Mailman, and it was Carmelo against that mailbox.
Yeah,
we need one for you, sweets. Like, we're gonna
in
do
the candy shop, right?
Yeah,
I'm gonna ask my boy Craig. I'm gonna ask Craig to like set one up. We'll make a shoot, and then he'll like finesse it.
Oh, totally.
Yes, please. It needs to.
That's
happen.
A good idea, actually. Yeah, because honestly, those posters are legendary. Like me and Craig talked about
them.
Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, you don't really see, and it's funny because I actually literally talked about this the other day. I was like, probably the reason why they couldn't have them in uniform is because they didn't have the rights to use their uniform, right?
Right.
But
they got really creative. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. The creativity was so crazy, right?
It's even better. Eh? Otherwise, it would have just been a shot in uniform.
Exactly. Like, you would just see all the time.
For
right?
them playing, yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I miss those posters. I hope someone brings them back.
Yeah,
we should start making our own.
Costaco Brothers or whatever.
Yeah, Costaco Brothers, yeah.
That's cool. So you still play now, right? Like dropping ball here and there. Nice.
Yeah.
Like a weekly thing or?
Yeah, so there's a couple of runs. MLC has staff runs at different places. So I mean, like,
nice.
You know, it's practice court or launch pad. So yeah, I definitely try to get it. I was playing leagues and stuff, but which I would love to, but I think, you know, being like having game nights and Raptors nights and stuff and being around, like I can't necessarily commit if the game's the same night I'm working. But yeah, man, like I'm probably not going to stop playing, man, until like my body says no.
I notice like a lot of guys now, like, are you a music guy or non-music when playing? Because a lot of guys have, you know, AirPods on now or they'll have music playing. Like,
I mean, not really. It's funny. I mean, no. I mean, like, music's, like, if it's there, it's cool. I mean, like, they have it on the run, but if they don't have it, like, it doesn't bring more to the game for me, personally.
Doesn't do much for you, whether it's on or not. Some people need the music.
Some people need to get hype and stuff, whatever, which is cool, but, no.
No.
What about you guys?
No favorites when you're playing?
It's got to be stuff that gets you hype, right, if anything, sure. right? I mean, like, it's funny because, you know, obviously with The Last Dance, talking about the Bulls and, like, their intro music, which is, not even, like, outside of the context of hearing it for the warm-up of the Bulls.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that same kind of gravitas, right?
No.
But when you hear, like, the announcer on it, it's, like, you get really hyped. But, I mean, I think, like, upbeat stuff, like, hip-hop stuff, kind of, like, I mess with in terms of just getting that energy, like, amping you up and, you know.
We're going to get a little bit more into why we're asking you the music-related questions. But one last music-related question here. And this doesn't have to be, you know, related to basketball, but what would be your top five songs of all times?
You got top five songs of all time? Wow. It's easier to ask a starting five of all time than top five songs. let me think. So, probably dated because... You know, Spotty Odie Dopalicious by Outkast is probably one of them.
Okay,
nice.
Man, oh my gosh. Can I just give you artists as opposed to... Okay, so I'll try.
No, let's do artists, sure.
Track Called Quest,
nice.
Electric Relaxation, something from Mos Def, early Mos Def, probably.
Black Star, maybe?
Yeah, Black Star is what that era like record stuff is like sick to me. So
nice.
Something in there, maybe something like old Public Enemy, maybe like a Rebel Without a Posse. In terms of thinking of getting hype, you know what I mean, like that kind of stuff. Annie Up is a good one by MOP, like hype up stuff for sure. Like if I could say, like I'm going back to the question of the like when you asked about hype up music, and I think that's kind of what it's gonna think. If I just choose five songs that I loved, it's like I'd be here for a while.
Nice.
Maybe we'll leave that for a whole episode about music.
There you go.
So, Dwayne, we're going to move on to the next section, which, you know, when I was trying to come up with these questions, I had all the questions and I'm like, I need a name for this section just, you know, for my own sake. And after seeing sort of the theme along, I was like, oh, he made things happen as I don't know if this was planned or I know he had a goal but he made things happen. So this section, I decided to call it Making Things Happen.
Okay.
So on an interview that I found with Emerge Magazine that you did back in 2016, I didn't know that.
Is there something in the water in BC that's got you guys with your digging deep down research stuff, man? Like Nardwuar,
baby.
Like all you guys are like on the research, man. I'm like, geez.
We try to keep we don't want to sound not only uneducated, but more like we want to try to pretend that we know what we're talking about here.
Just really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, you guys are informed, man.
Because honestly, I had no idea. You worked for Sony Music for a long time, and that's when you decided to change things. So could you take us behind the scenes of that decision of moving from what sounded to be a really cool gig at Sony Music to then venturing into what seemed like unknown and trying to get into basketball media?
Yeah, so I worked in the music industry for about like 15 years. I worked for Sony Music and I worked for EMI and Virgin Records. And I'll take it back, and this might be a long story, I apologize.
No, but, go for it, please.
What happened, how it really started for me is that I went to college and I was writing for the paper. And at that time, hip hop music was kind of starting to really pop off, but a lot of the media didn't really understand it or get it. So I went to the editor at the New School paper. I'm like, hey, let me do some music reviews. And he was like a punk guy. He wore a kilt, everything, Irish guy, or Scottish guy. Who wears kilt? Scottish guys, right?
Scottish guys.
Thank you. Thank you. Sorry. Sorry to all the Irish people. But, I wrote a review. It was on a Redman album, whatever. I did it. I brought it back. I gave him the CD. And he's like, no, keep that. I'm like, what do you mean keep it? He goes, oh, the record company sent it. And I'm like, what do you mean? I go, there's someone's job is to sit in office and send CDs out to people? Like, that's kind of interesting. And I kind of like started looking into the music industry. And what happened was that, as I mentioned, with like urban music was popping, the people in the labels didn't really understand it, especially in Canada, because there wasn't a lot of outlets for it. So I'm a consumer, right? Like I know that like back in the day before there was like commercial radio, people would listen to college radio shows, or they'd be in the clubs or the hip hop spots, whatnot. So I started basically working for the record companies, doing marketing, helping them kind of reach this new audience and, you know, evolve from promotion to marketing and whatnot. And I'll get back to that. That'll make sense later as I get to it. But what happened was I was writing before I got in the industry. And obviously, as I got in the industry, I couldn't be writing about artists that I was working with, so I stopped writing. And then, of course, the internet started hitting. And people were downloading a lot, as we know, the nature of the game. And the music industry had been established so long and making so much money, and people's careers were based on it. Like they had vinyl, they got rid of vinyl, then they got CDs, and like people kept spending money on physical product.
Right.
And when people were downloading, that money wasn't happening anymore. So every year they'd be cutting back, laying off. And I'm like, I can see where this is going. And it was becoming more about the money, more about the product than it was about the art. And of course, the music business is half business, half music. I get that. But like I was working Katy Perry's first record, I Kissed a Girl. I was a marketing manager for that. And that like blew up. And the new record came like, we need to sell more units. And it was like units. It could have been anything. It could have been like headphones. It could have been glasses. It wasn't about the music anymore. Right. And I'm like, you know what? Instead of giving this guy who's been here for 20 years, has a mortgage and a family, no transferable skills, giving him a package to pay on his ass, give me a package, let me figure it out. And it's funny because like when I left, when I took the package, I was like, okay, I'm going to be a marketing agent for basketball players. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to brand manage basketball players, whatever. But at that time, there's only two Canadian players in the NBA, Steve Nash and Jamal McGlaur. So it's not like now where I could kind of like find these guys who are going to the NBA. So it was very short-sighted in that idea, which didn't work. But I started writing and I basically – you know, had this package and basically was going to start from scratch. And I love basketball. Basketball was always a part of like who I was. I was always like a fan. I was always watching. I was always playing. And I said, I'm going to try and make this work. And I basically was freelancing for a bunch of different places for very little money for a long time. And my wife's like, you know what? I don't think this is going to work. I think you need to like just find another job and like do something different. And I'm like, nah, I want to make this work. And I kind of like hustled and wrote about anything you could think of. I wrote about politicians. I did hockey stuff. I did different sports. I did everything. Because as a freelancer, you got to make money, right? I can't afford to be like, oh, I'm only going to write for basketball when there's no real platforms in this country that have outlets for it. And that was a challenge because there wasn't a lot of platforms in Canada that were, you know, talking about basketball. So continue to grind. And then I started writing for Hoop Magazine first. And I'll come back to that because I think that's, you're going to ask me a question that'll tie into that later. And then I started writing for Slam as well and NBA.com and doing different outlets. And that kind of like was kind of really validating because I think, you know, that was what the grind was for. And then also what allowed me to be is like in Toronto or Canada, I was doing something tangible as opposed to writing for these other magazines that weren't really basketball magazines. And that's kind of where I like started saying, okay, you know what? Now I can start transitioning into like making basketball my focus as opposed to like just hustling. And that was, it was a grind, but it started working out. And then from there, it kind of evolved into doing some radio stuff with TSN, where a friend of mine, we did a podcast. We pitched TSN, who just started their radio station in Toronto. Knowing they didn't have any basketball people saying, hey, we want to do a show. They gave us a podcast. If I'm going on too long, feel free to stop me.
No, please. Yeah. Go ahead. This is
they gave us a podcast, and we started doing it. And we got Corey Joseph, when he was with the Spurs, to come up to TSN to record our podcast. And Corey Joseph, even though he lives like 10 minutes away from TSN, had never been to TSN before.
So the first time I went to TSN,
they said was with us. And then Jamal McGuire. So in his season when he was with the Raptors, Jamal McGuire came and he came to our podcast. And they're like, how are they getting these guys here? Like, it's not like they're on the radio. It's not like they're on TV. It's a podcast. And I had some pretty good relationships with ESPN writing for Slam. Mm-hmm. And back when First Take was like super hot, when it was everything, when Skip was on it still, 2 weeks in a row, we had Skip on 1 week and we had Stephen A. Smith on the next week. And like radio people were like, we can't get these guys on the radio. Like, what are you guys doing? But we had relationships and we had good stuff and people messed with us. So that evolved into like a weekly radio show where we just talked about basketball, with college, NBA, some local stuff. And then from there, I connected with Akil Augustine for The Hangout. And so I started producing The Hangout, which was kind of weird for me because I'd never produced TV before in my life. Never been in control in my life. And things kind of continue to snowball from there. Because I feel like I don't want to talk. I feel like I'm going to answer every question if I keep talking. So.
No. That's fine. I mean, it's just fine. You know, I sent this article that I was just talking about to Evans and to Rafa. And I was like, he's done it all. And you know, we've all been in that situation where, you know, we were asked to do something that we're not used to at work, or we're not necessarily, we don't have the skills, and we've talked about it. And we say like, you know, we just go for it and we try to make the best out of it. But you are the best example of someone that put their mind to it and decided to make things happen, like I said. And you ended up with this, I mean, you're a pioneer with the big basketball movement here in Canada. And I think that's potentially an understatement, because before that, and you just mentioned it, if the radio couldn't even have the one or two Canadian guys on their shows and you started bringing them, that says a lot about your contributions to the sport in this country.
Well, I appreciate that, man. I mean, the bigger thing is that they hadn't been to TSN for the TV. Like, it was like, they hadn't been in the building ever. So I'm on the radio station, they'd never even been there for TV. So everyone was like, what are they doing here? But yeah, it was a challenge. And I think I mentioned the whole music thing because when I started kind of like in this game on the media level, there was a lot of similarities, man, in terms of like back in the music thing, it was like, oh, well, hip hop, it's like, it's only black kids who like this stuff. It's not like, you know, it's very niche. And then of course, obviously we know like hip hop is universal. And it was the same thing with basketball, where they felt like only a certain audience liked basketball. Meanwhile, we know that basketball is universal as well. So it was a lot of, it was an uphill battle in terms of like really trying to push for, but I felt like for me, like TSN is like, you know, one of the top two platforms for sports in this country. And I felt like this place is a place where it could be a platform for basketball. Like, people are going to hear it, which is what was important.
Yeah. Back to the music industry. Yep. I was curious, like, did you work a lot with the Toronto hip hop artists or Canadian hip hop artists?
Early in my career,
through Sony, I guess. Well,
before I got to the major label, he worked for this independent record company called Beat Factory, and like you know, a lot of the older guys like Cardinal and Choclair and Rascals and all those guys were doing stuff through there. And then like, but with the bigger labels, it's like you'd have to be signed to the label. So Chaos was on EMI, so I worked with Chaos for a long time.
Wow.
His stuff. Who else am I trying to think of? But I mean, like, Canadian labels weren't signing a lot of Canadian urban acts. So there wasn't a lot of people coming through, but the independent scene was still obviously going strong.
That's cool. So you're kind of bounded to the Canadian hip hop scene through working with all these different artists, like you mentioned, yeah. Choclair, and you mentioned Rascals earlier too.
Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, like I know all those guys, but yeah, like I kind of came up when all that stuff was happening. I mean, you know, I've got a gold copy of Choclair's record here that I worked on and stuff too.
Oh, nice.
But,
yeah, I heard somewhere. So, I might have heard somewhere that you might have even DJed for him once too.
Holy like, what?
You wear a lot of hats, man.
Okay. Really. Now I feel like I'm in an Arbor interview. How did you? Wow. Yeah.
Oh hey, God. Man. You talk on a multiple podcast, so maybe you're making some news.
We did our homework.
Yeah. So basically, I was road managing a tour for Choclair, and we were in Thunder
Road
Bay.
Road manager too.
Yeah, literally, hey, when it's Canadian hip-hop, man, independent, you got to do everything, right? and there was no DJ, so I basically had to kind of be the DJ. And also, I have a funny story, like, this underground hip-hop, well, not underground, but a hip-hop group called the Beatnuts from back in the day.
Yeah.
They were playing a show at Montreal. It was actually like a big party slash rave at the Olympic Stadium in Montreal.
Oh, wow.
And,
party scene.
So there was a bunch of stages within it, whatever, right? And, like... Yeah. I was working their record. They're like, yo, can you run our sound? I'm like, yeah, sure, of course. Like, I'd love to. I was at the soundboard. I wasn't, like, on stage. Right. But it was a DAT, right? So DATs are, like, the digital cassettes. So it's, like, they're old. It's old technology. Right. But the way DATs were, it wasn't – so, like, CDs or DATs, you ID them. So when you press fast forward, it goes to the beginning of the song. Now, if a song is not ID'd, you can skip. It'll go into a random spot in the middle of the song. So they'll finish the song. And then I'll skip to the next song, and then I'll go to the middle of the song. So then I have to scan back to the beginning of the song to cue it up, right? So you're listening for that. Meanwhile, they're waiting for the song. They never told me it was an ID. So meanwhile, but they knew it. Yo, dude, what's up with the sound? And I'm like, yo, your shit is fucked up, man. Like, so it was kind of funny because I'm like, I'm trying to like finesse it. But yeah, I've had some interesting experiences with that in terms of like, being around performers and artists. And I mean, I think at Sony and EMI, like, you know, you mentioned Black Star, like I worked all the record stuff, like
that
stuff was dope. You know, some early Cameron stuff, like, you know, Rage Against the Machine, Wu-Tang, what else? A bunch of stuff, man. Like around a lot of cool stuff. That transition was kind of interesting because I think one thing about that is that working with artists, like Lenny Kravitz or Janet Jackson, whatever, you're just working with them. So you don't really get like, oh, super excited. So kind of transitioning to the NBA, it wasn't a big deal where like if I saw someone, I'd be like, oh my gosh, it's, you know, whomever, like LeBron James, because you kind of, the dynamic is already, like I never really walked into places where I was like, holy cow, that's that person, which I kind of almost sometimes regret because I didn't, okay, Kobe Bryant's the only person I had that for, I won't lie. I've never... So this was like 2000 Olympics, and they were doing like a junket in New York to kind of, this is the Redeem team, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, Melo, LeBron, J. Kidd, Tayshaun Prince.
Deron Williams wasn't there.
Deron Williams was there, yeah. Dwight Howard.
Yeah. Chris Bosh.
Chris Bosh. So they were doing a shoot for Slam because the Olympics thing, and it was like all white backdrop and it was Kobe, whatever. And I saw Kobe, I just had to go, yo, man, like, I have a lot of respect for what you do, like, whatever. Like, I don't actually do that to anybody because if I'm interviewing you, whatever, it's like I can't be like, yo, I'm a big fan. Because then it's like, you know, the dynamic has shifted, right? Like, I'm a fan.
Professional
I'm not like,
level, yeah.
Exactly, right? So I wasn't talking to Kobe, so I decided to take this opportunity because I don't want to see him. But generally, yeah, I think for the most part, it's like, yeah, there's a professional attitude I kind of take to my stuff. So I still appreciate what they do on the floor, but, you know.
And so did you always know you wanted to end up working in basketball?
No.
Or was it something that
like no like... only when I realized, well, as I was kind of getting out of the music industry, that's when I said I want to work in basketball, because I was like I totally recognize how fortunate I am, because my whole working career has been doing stuff that I love. Like I loved music I still love music, but I wanted to be in music, and I basically, that was my job. Like, music was my job. And I said, oh, I love basketball. I want to do basketball now. So I totally recognize that I'm, you know, very fortunate to have that. But once I was, like, saying I want to be out of music, basketball is what I want to do, and I just basically figured it out. And I think it's kind of funny that it evolved to where I was doing writing, to doing radio, to doing TV, because I'd never gone to school for any of that stuff. Like, I never went to journalism school. I never, like, I enjoyed writing, and I was cool, but, you know, I never was formally trained like that. I'd never been on the radio before. I mumble. Like, I mean, you know, like, and then the TV stuff, I think the extension TV worked because at the core of it all is, like, telling a story, right? And I think, you know, with a lot of stuff I produce on Excel or other stories, it's like, the story is a story whether you're writing or not. I'm not holding a camera and I'm not editing stuff, but I know, you know, where I wanted to go in the direction in that regard. So I think that's kind of what's worked. But, you know, producing a show like The Hangout, where you're in a control room, running cameras, running graphics, running all that stuff, and learning terms you've never known before, was kind of like, it was a good lesson, though. It was a really good lesson.
So how was it that you made your way into this amazing publication? I mean, Hoop is the official magazine of the NBA, and Slam is, I would call, I always called it the basketball Bible.
The Bible, yeah. Sure.
So I was always, so when I was writing, I was always, like, scared to try and, like, go to these magazines, because to me, like, you know, it was kids, and, like, I mean, I don't want to keep talking about how old I am, but, like, I say in the context of, like, the media landscape was different. Like, before the internet, like, I remember as a kid that, like, if I wanted to know what happened in, like, the Pistons game, I would have to read the box score in the newspaper to see, like, who scored what, because you wouldn't see it on SportsCenter, and you couldn't go on the internet and find out. So there wasn't a lot of stuff. Like, for me growing up, Slam was everything, because if you wanted to know what kicks were happening, it's in Slam. The only way you're going to see new kicks is in Slam, or whatever the gear is, right? Or, like, interviews, cool interviews with, like, players that you rate. So it was like, oh, Slam, I'm scared. But the Hoop story is kind of really interesting, because I had pitched them, and, you know, I would look at the magazine and be like, oh, this is a cool story. This is a fit. And I pitched my editor for almost a year straight. Like, every 2 weeks, I'd be setting them, like, story ideas. This, whatever, whatever. Yeah. Never get a response back. Never. Like, never, not even like, now we're not interested, now we're busy, now this is whack. Nothing. But I just kept doing it, like, every two, three weeks. And I pitched the story to him, and he called me within, like, 15 minutes of getting the email.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, what the hell? it was a story on kind of basically doing, like, a kind of, like, inside training camp. You know what I mean? Like, actually going through, like, training camp with a team and, like, telling that experience, what it's like, whatnot. And he's like, I love this idea. He's like, I don't think it would work because the team would never let the journalist kind of go through that experience. But then we started talking about doing, like, a trying out for a G League team, like, what that experience is like. And also, so that ended up being my first story for Hoop, where I basically, I did a tryout with the G League team. So back then, the Erie BayHawks were the team for the Raptors.
Right.
And they had a tryout in Toronto, but there was literally, like, 16 guys. Like, there wasn't a lot of people there, right? So I kind of went through that and kind of told my experience. So then I basically said, and the story, and also, so part of it was, like, what the firsthand experience was like, but also the stories about the guys who were trying to try out, what their journeys were, what they're trying to accomplish, where they've been. So I went down to, there used to be a team called the Springfield Armor, which was in Springfield, Massachusetts, where the Hall of Fame is. And Dee Brown was the GM of the team at the time.
Okay.
And they had an open tryout, and basically there was, like, 250 dudes there. So my intention for that wasn't to try and try out, because I'd already got that experience, but just talk to the guys there and get their stories. And there was some really, a guy came from Greece to try out for the G League team, whatever.
Wow.
And guys had been overseas. So there's a really lot of interesting stories. And that was, like, my first piece I did with them. And that's actually probably one of my favorite stories, I think, because of, like, the journey that I get through to that, and then actually got to experience it, and then some of the stories. But that was my first story with them. And then with Slam was, like, I'm like, okay, I'm feeling myself. I'm like, okay, I can write for Slam now. I'm like, I'm doing my thing. And Dave Zirin is a writer who, his big thing is kind of the intersection of sports and politics. So we had, he had a documentary that he had, which we kind of brought him up to do a speaking engagement around. And I knew he wrote for Slam. And I'm like, hey, man, like, I really like to do some stuff with Slam. He's like, don't worry, I got you. I'll introduce you to Ben. He's a super cool dude, whatever. I'm like, great. So he introduces me on email, whatever. Ben's like, hey, cool, what's up? And I'm like, hey, okay, I've got these ideas. And they weren't like, oh, I want to do a cover story. Like super mid to low level story ideas, nothing special. And he's like, Dwayne, like, you know, I appreciate it, but like, I've got like 7 guys in the office and 5 guys across the U.S. who kind of like are ahead of you in the queue. You know what I mean? Like for the lower level stuff. So, I mean, like you're not, you know, so he wasn't like, you're not going to get it. But I was like, okay, well, I can keep pitching all I want, but other people are going to have the advantage. So what I did is back then Slam used to have different blogs, like different blogs on like whatever. So I pitched Ben. I go, hey, I want to do a blog on sports basketball movies. He's like, are you sure? And this is before 30 for 30. So 30 for 30 hadn't even started yet. And I'm like, yo, I dig films. I'm kind of aware what the independent stuff is. There's stuff out there. I think we can do it. So he's like, cool, no problem. Knock yourself out. And I came with some stuff. And he's like, oh, this is pretty interesting. Like, you know, I never heard of this, or these some interesting, you know, like basketball stories are, there's tons of stuff out there.
Yeah.
And then 30 for 30 started. So then 30 for 30 was like, obviously there's a lot of stuff there. And it got to the point where when stuff would come into the office, he would go, okay, you know what? Dwayne's doing this now. And I was also writing stuff in the magazine on certain films that were kind of popping and doing stuff. But what happened, the best thing about it is that it allowed me to develop a relationship with Ben where I wasn't constantly pitching him. Like, I was like the expert to him. He's like, well, if anyone knows about basketball, he's Dwayne. So he'd be like, what's popping? What's going on? So now it's like, I'm not trying to hustle him. He's like, yo, what's good? And then we were just talking about regular stuff. And our relationship was more like a respect relationship as opposed to like, oh, here's Dwayne trying to hit me up again.
Right.
And then when basically unsolicited, he's like, this is the Raptors kind of like Gravis Vasquez trade, you know, when they started kind of like making the, you know, obviously turning the franchise there now. Yeah. He's like, well, one of us are on the Raptors and you're the guy in Toronto, so you got to do the feature.
Wow.
So that was kind of like the kind of culmination of it all. But I mean, I think, you know, when you say like, how did this happen? I think, I don't know. But I know, I mean, it's like, I think like, obviously trying to find a ways where I think, you know, everyone's like, oh, I want to do this. Even when people would say, I'm a rapper or I want to be like a host. It's like, what separates you from everyone else, right? Because there's a million podcasts out there, right? And I mean, you guys know, obviously research and insight is key for what you guys do. But, you know, like, I think what separates you? And I thought, like, how am I going to be just not another writer in Ben's eyes? And I said, let me become an expert in this. And that's kind of what developed a relationship where he said it, where so, it wasn't like, yeah.
Sorry, so it really started from me just pitching to him something he had in mind that was basketball movies.
Yeah,
and
well,
stuff and-
yeah. I mean, pitching him where, yeah, that was, well, I mean, pitching stories didn't work because there was, I was like the 10th guy. So I would never got the Andrew Nicholson, you know, sidebar story because there was 10 guys were ahead of me. But allowing to differentiate myself is kind of what put me in a different light. And then, of course, Toronto was like, they didn't have anyone there and he knew I was there and, you know, giving me the pulse. That kind of went to my advantage.
Nice. Speaking of giving the pulse, like, where do you draw your inspiration from when you write your stories? Or where do you tend to sort of lead your thoughts to?
I think it's all about the story, you know? I mean, whether I'm producing content or whether I'm writing stuff, which I haven't really written in a while, but I think it's about the story because I feel like, you know, we all know basketball, we all know the game, whatever, but I think it's like, what else, what's the other extra element that kind of makes it interesting beyond like there's a million of dope ballers. There's a million, like there's 10, like we all know like 10 guys that are like sick, right? But what makes that one, what makes it more interesting than like the other guy that's got a better crossover? I think, you know, what is their story? What sticks out? Not like they have to have like, oh, like my mom had cancer or whatever, but just like what makes them interesting? Because I think that's kind of what, that's what makes it interesting for me. Like we know there's so much basketball out there. It's like, how does it stand out? And I think that's kind of like what I really look at.
It's basically, it's like the vehicle that leads you to the story that sort of unveils itself.
Yeah. But it's still rooted in basketball, right? It's still basketball at the end of the day, right? And I think for me as a basketball head, it has to still have that basketball feel because I want it to be something where like, you know, like we could rock with it, but someone who kind of likes, you know, who the story might draw them in, but it's like, oh, okay, cool. So if that makes sense.
Totally.
So, I mean, getting your break is already a challenge of itself. What would you say were other challenges when you were trying to not only pitch the stories, but, you know, becoming that expert in Ben's eyes or, you know, trying to make it into these publications? Was it maybe that, you know, you mentioned that you didn't go to school for journalism? Was it maybe sometimes self-doubting, or what were some of the challenges that you faced throughout this journey?
Well, I think from the writing standpoint, it wasn't, you know, it's writing was different, because I think it was kind of like, I felt that the challenges really was like in Canada, there's literally at that time, even now, I mean, like the print game is different where note magazines aren't important anymore, but there wasn't really any platforms that wanted to talk about basketball. And if you even look at TSN, who I was writing for at times, but even for hockey, there isn't really any content. Like, I mean, like let's take Grantland, for example, which isn't around anymore, but like you would never find, like, you rarely find features and content like that on like TSN or Sportsnet. Sportsnet more so, because they have a lot more writers. So I think the problem was that there was no platforms. It's like, hey, like let's talk about like Andrew Wiggins, whatever, right? Before, you know, he went to Kansas, whatever, and there wasn't a platform for it. So the challenge was that there wasn't really a place to kind of like shine light on these stories, I found. And then the places like in the US that did it, it was a competition, because, you know, you had to like, Andrew Wiggins kind of is an anomaly, because he was a top rated prospect, obviously, yeah. And he's a Canadian. But yeah, I think the platform was a challenge. I don't think there was a lot of doubt. I mean, I think I just kind of was like, I got to admit that I definitely was focused and driven and stuff, and kind of like definitely stayed on it. But not necessarily people to believe in what I was doing, but just people to believe in the importance of what these stories are, or who these people are, or that there's an audience that actually cares about these players or these athletes in this game, in this country.
Which says a lot about your work, because you are the conduct for that story, right? And if you don't make it sound interesting, then, you know, you lost the person that can make it explode. So it says a lot about what the type of things and content that you're creating that, like you said, makes the casual hoop fan go like, oh, this is cool. And the major hoophead go like, I want to learn more.
Yeah, I think, you know, I learned a lot about through pitching, man. I mean, because I did a lot of it, right? And yeah. I've gotten so, like, I mean, if you only look at my percentage for pitches, it's like probably 10%, because you get a lot of no's, right?
Right.
So it allows you to perfect kind of like, okay, you know, I think one thing is kind of like you guys today, right? Like you guys know who you're talking to, like you've done your research, right? So I think there's nothing worse, and I get this a lot. Oh yeah, you know, I really like that show you do, NBA Small. And it's like, you don't even know what the name of the show is, right? Like, so it's like, I think when you're trying to pitch someone, you got to do your research and understand how it's going to benefit their platform. And I think, how their viewers or readers or listeners are going to appreciate that content, or why it speaks to them. And I think that's very important, because you got to know your audience, right? Just like you guys are knowing your subject today with me.
That's a good point. No, speaking of platforms, I think you had your own publication, Soul Shift, at one point.
Yes, yes. You guys.
How was that experience putting that together?
It's funny hearing this stuff, because it's like, it's reminding me that so many things that I've done, which is kind of weird. So Soul Shift was something that I did with a couple of colleagues, one of which is Craig, who's involved in Neek. And we felt that we're a basketball fans, we're sneakerheads. But obviously, the sneaker market is like super obviously populated, and we're not going to be better than the five major sneaker sets that we all know and love. Right. So we wanted to do a bit of wear testing. We want to talk about the culture of the game. And we kind of said, okay, let's do a digital magazine that we're going to do quarterly, and just tell some great stories. And it was really, really fun. I mean, like, it's kind of cool to kind of create your own thing, which is, you know, for me, writing for other people was always cool, but then having your own thing that you kind of created was really good. And,
right.
And you know, like people being into it. So it was a really fun experience.
That's cool. Like, you really filled, like, I guess, the void in Canadian publication for that kind of stuff, right?
Having all that experience
you had in Slam, and being able to sort of translate that and put your own, you know, Canadian spin on it was cool to see.
Well, yeah, I think the thing is, too, is that, like, you look at, you know, we look at all the media we see, and like, it doesn't necessarily always speak to us, because like, we're here. There's a bit of a difference. I mean, there's so many similarities, but there is some differences between the Canadian market and the American market. So like, I think, you know, speaking to us, like as Canada, like what we're doing, and like, we've seen, one thing I really love about what I've seen over this time is how everything's evolved and grown. Like, I mean, there wasn't Dropping Dimes podcast back in the day. Like, there wasn't it. And like, you know, we can say that there's too many, but the fact that there's so many people who want to kind of have a voice and do their stuff, which is great. And I think that's what's been so good for the game, and technology has been a big part of that as well.
That's true. All right. Was there any writers or producers that you admire going into your own projects?
So Scoop Jackson was
slam,
like
slam editor. Yeah, right?
Yeah. And it was funny because at first I didn't like Scoop because
interesting.
I was like, oh, why does he always got to put himself in the story? I didn't really dig it. And then I just really started like reading his stuff and really appreciating it, that he's a really, really skilled writer. And then he's also like really super great dude and really, really good in terms of like, he took time to kind of really give me a lot of insight and advice and stuff too.
Oh, that's cool.
And then like producing content is tricky because you don't really get to know who the producers are all the time. But, you know, I think I look at like Open Gym was a kind of inspiration and a lot of stuff I do in terms of like how they've got in Canada, at least they change how like we saw basketball. You know what I mean? Aside from just seeing a game report and an update and the highlights and stuff, whatever, they kind of went a bit beyond that. So when I had a chance to work with
a bit more culture, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I think I love basketball. I'm not, you know, the analytics. I'm not the doctor like some people, you know. but, I mean, like, obviously I know the game. I love the game. But the culture of it is, like, what wakes me up every day. You know what I mean? Like,
true.
Basketball's got to be kind of connected to almost everything I do in that sense.
That's awesome.
Was you mentioned one of your initial story for Hoop was like a big moment for you. Was there any other story that you really enjoyed working on that you can remember?
The Raptors piece I did was kind of cool because I think, you know, as like whether I'm doing like, you know, NBA.com stuff or radio stuff, whatever, you're around the team, but I don't really need to interact with these guys. Like I don't need to ask these guys questions in the scrum. I don't need to do that stuff. But actually having conversations with a lot of the players in the team about kind of what was happening was fun. I mean, it was really interesting to kind of like get that time and get that access because you don't, unless you're doing certain things or like really coming for international, like, you know, ESPN or the big magazines, you don't get that kind of access and opportunity. So I think that Raptors piece was good. And then it kind of sucked though because it wasn't quite their time yet. But, and like, you know, as Canadians, we always want to put on like, oh, the Raptors are getting some shine. Like, this is it. Like, we're good. So, but I mean, they were a good team. I mean, that was the beginning of, that was really the start of kind of where this franchise is right now. So that was kind of, and of course, like, you know, you're repping from home. So that was really good.
Would you call your homecoming in terms of basketball media and representing Toronto?
Yeah. I think just getting a chance to do that and talking about the home team, like that's the move.
So, you mentioned that, you know, we're sort of taking you to a little bit of a memory lane, you know, making you remember all the projects that you're involved in. And our next section, we want to do a little bit more of that because you're a basketball influencer in the best sense of the world that, you know, not like social media, but, you know, you have a
just the amount of projects you've had your hands on.
I think, you know, just like we have a carbon footprint, I think you truly have a basketball footprint that can be traced. So how do you get started working in so many local global projects? And we want to learn more about Crown League and Hoop Club and Raptors and Nick for sure.
So I think like one thing is like, this is my job. And I don't mean that sarcastically, but it's like, you know, like I know some people who have like full-time jobs and they have their own things or whatever. Right. But like basketball is really my job. It's been my job for like 10 years now. Which is crazy, right?
Yeah.
So like I didn't have like, okay, you know, I worked at a office and then like I would do this stuff. So when you say like I've had so much stuff, it's because it's really been a hustle, right? And I didn't want to have to get a job at an office. So how can I find these other things to kind of work for me where I could, you know, kind of turn them into things that I could kind of help craft and grow, but also build my career. So it's kind of like that freelance mentality, which is really something I wasn't used to because I had a job for most of my work career and, you know, and benefits and vacation and car allowance and all that stuff. But I really liked being my own boss. I didn't like the idea of having someone to tell me what to do. And if, you know, like you get what you put into it, and I kind of worked pretty hard. And I think that's kind of how it happened. So having that stuff is just kind of a byproduct of like me trying to like kind of grow myself professionally in this game.
That's cool. Speaking of being your own boss, as Rod alluded to earlier, Crown League, how did that come about? Tell us a bit more about that.
So Crown League, that
themed as like the premier like men's basketball league in Toronto, if I'm not mistaken.
Canada, man. Canada, I'm
sorry. Canada,
It's okay. So I've had like a long-term relationship with the head of marketing at Nike, like back when I was in the music industry. And, you know, we're both basketball guys. And he was like, you know, I think the city needs something. And we kind of really put our heads together to figure out, you know, how that would work and what that would be and how it would flow, right? And, you know, because now it's like, as the game's evolved, you know, you got guys who are, you know, whether playing overseas or playing in the NBA or high college guys, and they want to play against high competition. And how is that going to happen? Because they can't be playing against guys like you and me. That's not going to help, like, Corey Joseph or Tristan Thompson or Jamal Murray get better.
They need elite competition.
Yeah, exactly. So, creating a space where that could happen. But more importantly, what I really love about Crown is that it's a vibe in terms of, like, on Fridays, people would come out to watch ball, but kind of like reconnect. You know what I mean? Like, it was kind of like, I don't want to say the spot, like it was a club, it was a social thing, but there was definitely a social cultural aspect to it where like people came not knowing who they're going to see, but the ball would be good. People would be, you know, like have their kicks, they'd be looking right, and you'd be connecting with people and seeing people. And that's what was part of the energy I really thought about it. And then, you know, like also guys don't get a chance to show out at home. I mean, you look at, you know, let's see, like, Jamal Murray, for example, who was supposed to play 1 year and didn't happen, but you know he's only in Toronto once all year, playing for, against the Raptors, right? Because they only come once. Right. So these guys don't get a chance to play at home, and also in an environment where, like, you know, it's a smaller gym. You know, you could reach out and touch them. The energy is different. It's a lot looser, and I think all those things kind of came into play. And Nike like really made sure that, you know, the product was like, in terms of like the overall
look, the overall look and brand,
and then just like kind of honestly dealing with, like, you know, the stakeholders in the game and making sure that, you know, the right people kind of we had as GMs and making sure that we were bringing in building a product that, you know, when Kelly Olynyk goes, yo, I'm coming home, I gotta play in Crown, those things happen. Or like when you know, the junior men's national team who just won a gold medal came in, it's like, hey, this is where you can see these guys who just, you know, did something that no one in Canada has ever done, kind of thing. So that's been something really incredible, and also kind of elevating the women's game as well, where we had, you know, in the last year we had like a women's game, and we're gonna, you know, the plan is to grow that as well, because they're doing the same thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, from a very far perspective, and, you know, West Coast, you're seeing everything that you guys put up for Crown League. It definitely, when I first learned about it, I'm like, oh my god, this looks like Drew League, right? That it it creates such a hype, and you know, I could see myself just in the stands watching a really good game of basketball and just enjoying that pro-am vibe to it, where everything is, you know, you're not in an arena where, you know, you might be at the nosebleeders and you understand that those are, you know, the players are almost untouchable, but you're seeing guys that are really good, that are professionals, and, you know, you're a lot closer to the action, and yet you have, you know, you built, like you mentioned, this vibe that it's such a good quality that, you know, it really makes us want to take a flight to Toronto and just experience that.
Well, probably what happened this summer, like COVID, but definitely like next summer you guys should come down. And I mean, you're right, Drew League is a perfect example in terms of the energy you kind of want to create. And I think, you know, guys who are pros know that they got to be on their game because people look at them, and guys who are like trying to be in that spot are also like, yo, I want to show what I got. And I think that's kind of what's really been good about it. And I think, you know, we've had, you know, like guys who like Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Ignis Brizdikas, you know, guys who are like in high school before they kind of went pro, kind of were there. So it was kind of cool to see, like, oh, I saw that guy in Crown League and now he's doing his thing. And I think, like, you know, in a gym like that where, like, you know, you can feel the energy in the gym, and, you know, it's free. So if I'm like a kid and I can't afford to go to a Raptors game, it's like, oh, DeLon Wright and Norm Power are playing here. Like, cool. I can literally like see them in the court side and touch them. So that's what the beauty of what is brought to the city.
And it really creates even more community around basketball, right? Like you said, it's maybe for those families that cannot go to Raptors games or the Raptors 905, they have Crown League, and it's there. It's palpable.
Yeah. And that's it's really for the culture. And also, and then, like I said, back to the beginning, it's like, it's a high level of ball where these guys are playing and they're getting good runs in too. So it's not like, you know, and I think what's funny is like 2 years ago, was it 2 years ago or 3 years ago? It was before. So they changed the format for the Olympics, where they had the different modules as opposed to whatever. And a lot of guys like Jay Triano and Roy Rana were coming to Crown League and watching guys and seeing guys that they hadn't really considered for the squad. And I know
it was like a scouting ground almost.
Yeah, it was a scouting ground, which was great. So it's like it was also helping people kind of like, I don't want to revive their careers, but I know like there was one guy, Richard Amardi, who was like, my story's never seemed to be short, but in the year one of Crown, security's like, yo, you need to talk to this guy. He was really rude to me. He came this way, he was really rude. I talked to this guy, I'm like, yo, like, listen, man, you can't do that, whatever. And he's looking at me like, who the hell are you? And I'm like, who the hell is this guy looking at me like, who the hell am I? And I was like, he rubbed me the wrong way, whatever. Fast forward to the next season, he's working security at Crown. Like, he's a security guard. He's not even playing, whatever. And I'm like, oh, this is the guy who was mouthing off to me last year, right? You know, funny how things work out. The next year, before we started, he came up to me. He's like, listen, I got to apologize to you because in the first year you came to talk to me and you came to me like respectfully, and I was really just respectful to you. And like, I really, you know, need to handle myself better. I really apologize. And I'm like, yo, you know what? I respect you. You're a real man for doing that. And he went to Oregon and played at Oregon and then played in National Basketball League Canada. But he's like a knucklehead. You know what I mean? He was his own worst enemy. We've heard these stories countless times. And he was like super into it, had a really good year, really good season. And that evolved into him playing for Canada. And then he played 905. He got waived, but he made the 905 team too as well. So that was kind of see where like guys' careers were kind of like, and I think having a platform where there was structure could help these guys, you know, not that they can't do it on their own, but like that platform kind of helped elevate them in that regard.
That is such a cool story. And it sort of goes back to what we're discussing, like, you know, being a young hot gun and then maturing over your career. That's a really good example of that.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there isn't really that kind of, like, the biggest thing I see with a lot of Canadian guys, well, guys in general, like, there's a difference between, like, being a great basketball player and being a professional. And I think by not having an environment like this, you don't really get to practice or see how to be professional because you just think that's how you can operate. And I think that's what those opportunities kind of allow these guys to be better professionals.
Right. So let's talk about one of your more recent projects, which I've been lucky enough to be a part of the discussions, and that's Nick. For everyone out there that might be living under a rock and haven't found you guys yet, would you please take us, you know, through everything? How did it come about, and what is it about?
So Nick is basically brainchild between myself and Craig, he goes by Craig Caucasian on Instagram. We've been a good friend for a while. He worked in Soul Shift as well. And we just like love basketball and all things around it. And we'd always be sharing stuff to each other. Oh, like this is dope. This is cool. And it was like, you know what? Why don't we just like do it like a digital newsletter and just share this content with people, like stuff that we think is really interesting or stuff that you need to know about. And, so we call it a playbook for hoop culture. So it's like basketball, art, design, images, everything. Like anything basketball is kind of like part of it. So we just did our second digital update where we're kind of like finding like great stories, you know, great videos, interesting things, some retro stuff, whatever. I think we're not trying to be like, obviously, Bleacher Report, The Ringer, in terms of like on the current interviews. And I mean, like there's places for that stuff. We're trying to offer a different perspective, which, you know, we're really happy about it. And I think like it's also evolved into our Instagram profile. So everything is that Nick Life, at that Nick Life. And we're growing it. And of course, you know, through the spirit of all that stuff, we've been having conversations about different things. And like, you know, Rodrigo, you're like a day oneer with us, man. I mean, we had a conversation about the HBO documentary called The Scheme. And then literally with The Last Dance, I think, you know, what happened really, I was like, this is coming out, you know, now because we're in isolation, we don't get to have conversations like we do. I mean, like this, but not with like, you know, 10 of your friends, whether it's like after a ball game and you guys are talking about whatever, or, you know, in the office or wherever. And I think we just wanted to kind of have a conversation where people could just talk about what they saw and how they felt about it, because, you know, the Last Dance is a seminal moment. And I think it's, you know, we had a really good response and even more great response. And I think it's just like, you know, we're just celebrating the game and sharing our love for with other people. And I think that's really what the core of it is.
I cannot put into words how much, you know, you guys, I think, nailed a concept that many of us have tried to allude to. That is, you know, talking about basketball and the culture around basketball, in a digital format as much as you guys have been able to do so, because, you know, yes, we all share basketball memes, and that's kind of the daily thing, right? Oh, look at this funny picture of LeBron or whatever it is. But there is so much product and content being around built around basketball that is comes in the shape of art, of movies, of songs. And you guys have captured that through Nick. I mean, I remember I commented on your Instagram profile that about A Quiet Court, which is a very short documentary about the only deaf men's basketball team in NCAA. I mean, I consider myself a hoophead, and I've never heard about it. And had it not been for Nick, this is such a masterpiece. Same with the scheme. I mean, it is a bigger production, but you know, had you guys not promoted it, I don't think I would have heard about it. And you know, I'm the kind of person that goes on Twitter. I'm like, what's new? What's new? What's new? What's new? What's new? But like, I saw Edible from Andrew Archer. And I was like, oh my God, I have his book here on my bookshelf. And that's awesome. Like, to see someone else and someone that, you know, with your guys' caliber of expertise and knowledge of the game, sharing all those things, it just brings that much more, it elevates the conversation about basketball a lot more.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like you said, I think, like, you know, we love the game, and we don't think we're like smarter or more, you know, smarter than anyone else, but, you know, we just want to share it. And I think, you know, like, Craig is the one who found The Quiet Court. I was like, oh my gosh, how do I not know about this? I was the same way, right? And I thought, this is fantastic. And it's like, we kind of feel like, oh, everyone needs to know about this. Like, if you like basketball, like, this is a crazy story. Mm-hmm. So it's really about sharing content, or even like stuff like Andrew Arch is a perfect example. Like, he's someone that, you know, I've been following for a while, and it's like, this guy's stuff is dope. You need to see it. Yeah. And I think that's kind of like really the spirit of what we're trying to do. Just share content. And also create some of our own. We got like a lot of cool, fun ideas that we're developing right now. But just building a place where people can like share and enjoy the game. And I think, like, you know, some of these conversations we have are the similar thing. And that's what it is. I mean, it's, I'm not trying to make it seem trivial, but it's really like a lot of the stuff I do, stuff that I'd be doing anyways. Like, if I had a job at a bank, I'd still be online or on Reddit or looking this stuff up or watching this stuff. So it's like, it's kind of like who I am in that sense, right?
That's cool. I like the lens you guys have for Neek, and just like the name of it. It's like, you guys are pulling out, you guys are digging for like really, you know, truly unique basketball stories or it's art and things like that.
A friend of mine who is like from music industry friend, we're still good friends. He's like, yeah, what's this Neek thing? And I'm like, it's like, what's the name about? I go, well, it's kind of like, exactly, right? And I'm like, well, we wanted something simple and short that was cool. And if you knew what it was, you did. And if you didn't, whatever, right? I go, but like, you know, Neek is what they call Dominique Wilkins. I had his poster model as a kid. I go, yes, there you go. He's like, oh, I get it now.
So right.
Kind of like cool, that, man. Kind of idea where it's like, you know, like, if you know, you know. And if you don't know, it's like, oh, this is interesting.
Right. Oh, I like it.
Thanks.
A little shout out to a human highlight film, right? So
yeah.
Subtle.
Yeah, it's funny.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's funny because like it's definitely like a shout out, but like we haven't like fully embraced like he's not like
he's not your the face of,
right? Yeah, like we have, yeah, we've never even posted anything with Dominique,
but that's like what makes it perfect, because honestly, like when I started getting, you know, when Instagram tells you like, oh, you should follow these people, and I, the first time that I saw Neek, I'm like, what
is this?
Yeah,
I'm like, and
but the clickbait worked.
Basketball has got like an account devoted to Dominique Wilkins. I mean, it's not the most far-fetched idea that I've heard, right? I mean, people do
profiles all the time.
Yeah. And then I go into it, I'm like, oh, well, hold on. This is nothing what I expected, but this is cool.
Cool. I'm glad you guys appreciate it, man. I mean, like, we're like literally at the core, we do it for the people who really love the game. And of course, we just do it for people who enjoy the game. So the fact that you guys like it really means a lot to me, awesome, and to Craig, man. Thanks.
It was nice to open that email today, that newsletter. Little article on Glenn Rice and stuff. It's crazy.
yeah. That was one of the things that we just kind of cooked up on our own and stuff. But nice. Yeah, I mean, I think it's like we just want, you know, we're just trying to share cool stuff. That's what it is.
I treat it as a subscription box almost, where you never know what you're gonna get, but you know, you open it and you're so excited for the next one to arrive because you just want to open it and see what are the goodies in there.
That's an interesting analogy. It's funny because, you know, we kind of collaborate on stuff, and I'm like, this is So obviously in the current newsletter, there's a thing on Chris Edser, who's an artist, and he made like Michael Jordan wallpaper. And I thought it was like, when I first, he said to Craig, said to him, I'm like, oh, like wallpaper for your phone, big deal. Everyone's seen it. And I'm like, no, it's actual wallpaper, like in your house.
Yeah.
I was like, this is insane. It was so detailed. But yeah, so it's like I, me and Craig have like, when we share stuff, it's like interesting, like, holy cow, the same kind of moments you guys have. And that's kind of the beauty of it.
So Dwayne, we're heading into our last section and we want to make it a bit of a fun one.
Okay, let's go.
You can answer some hard-pressed questions that we have for you. So this is our lightning round, and we're hoping to get you to answer this as fast as possible and as many as you can. So here's the first one. Best basketball movie?
Hoop Dreams. Oh, do I have to? How many do you want? Like, just one, right? Or
just one, yeah.
Hoop Dreams. Hoop Dreams, okay. For sure, yeah.
Evans, do you have one?
Cool. I'll go with, oh man, He Got Game.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. That's a good one. All right.
Next. What about you? Rapid fire. Come on.
Coach Carter.
You got
Carter.
Too many. There you go.
Okay.
At least we all have different ones, right?
Yeah.
All right. Next question would be a best basketball shoe to play in.
Ooh. The Kyrie line is pretty solid. I mess with the Kyrie's pretty heavy. The traction. Yeah, if I can say, which number? Number 3? Kyrie 3?
Nice.
But yeah. I like the line in general, though. About you?
I'm going with the...
I don't know if you guys do this, but I'm making sure you guys answer the questions, too.
Yeah. No, I'll give it some thought. I think I'll go with the Zoom BBs. They were the Steve Nash shoes.
Yep.
Those are solid, yeah.
I'll go with LeBron Soldier 10s. I absolutely adore those ones. The traction, and they have Velcro. I mean, I've voiced many, many times my love for Velcro in basketball shoes. They have 3 Velcro straps. I mean, 3 times of Velcro love for me.
So hold on. I have to qualify. I mean, like, it's not that I picked the most recent one, but like, I get a lot of sneakers, like a lot. I wear a lot of basketball shoes. So I definitely kind of rooted that in the most recent. And I think because I'm getting so many, I mean, yeah. Anyways, I don't know why I didn't say that, but
no worries.
Yeah, sorry. Don't worry about it.
All right. This one should settle some debates out there. Air Force or Air Max?
Air Max.
Ooh.
I say that because, well, I don't know technically. So the shoe I'm thinking of is the Air Force Max B, but that's also Air Force and Max together. But the
Trump
5 shoe. So I guess the answer is both.
Is that cheating? I don't know.
But I'm not trying to, though. It's actually both.
I didn't know they did both in the same shoe. That's crazy.
Yeah, because so that was the, and for me, that was like the Fab 5 shoe. That shoe was like so, like those guys.
It's iconic. Yeah, so. You have them in all black?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Nice. Come on, man. Oh, man, that's crazy.
That was like my first shoe.
What about you, Evans?
Nice. I'm going to go with neither, man. I was Zoom, man. Air Bubbles don't do anything for me. Like $140 here, so I don't need no jellies on my shoe.
Rod?
Air Force. The only reason, I mean, I love the Air Force, but the posters, again, going back to the artwork, oh my God, having a lineup of guys all dressed in white, like, you know,
pretty
super
classy.
Cool pilots wearing the Air Force ones. Ah, and then they recreated that with Steve Nash and Kobe. And
yeah, with 25.
I still have that poster back in my room at my parents' house. And yeah, nice. Air Force.
Second coming.
The Nike, Whedon and Kennedy, the advertising those guys do, like for the print stuff, like going back like in time, like it's phenomenal, man. Like all those ads are ridiculously sick, man.
Yeah.
Definitely. Cool. Speaking of shoes still, what's your favorite Jordan?
Oh, 3 True. Air Jordan 3 True Blue all day, every day.
Oh, True Blues.
Okay. Yeah, or any Jordan 3. Like, I love the Jordan 3 is my shoe. What about you?
Nice. I'm big on the ones lately. So I'll go with the ones.
Same ones. I consider the disruptor of the sneaker industry. And it will never get old. Never, ever, ever get old.
Yeah, that's timeless shoe, man. Timeless shoe.
All right. This one's a bit more quirky, but I want to know where's your allegiance at. OG or Ibaka? Best fashion sense.
Ibaka. Ibaka's been doing it for far too long, man. He's smooth, man. I mean, like, I think now he's stunting on a different level, but he's always been clean, man, with his stuff, man.
That's funny. I guess it goes with his character, too, right? With the Mafuzi chef and stuff. I'm going with Ibaka, man. That's Scarf Game.
It's art, man. It's art.
It's art.
I think I'm going to side with OG just because he's got that British accent to that adds that extra layer of sophistication to everything. So I'll go with OG.
I like that.
Nice. So we know you're a hip hop head, right?
Yeah.
Who's your favorite basketball rapper?
Well, man, I remember back in the days, this is like obviously when Shaq was rapping, that they had an album called Hip Hop's Best Kept Secret. And it was like a compilation album of players rapping.
Oh,
like
wow.
Chris Webber, Dana Barros, who else? I can't remember. Anyways, it was bad. I say that because I think today's Dame is the rapping champ for sure,
for
man.
Sure, yeah.
Like even like the battles he's been having with people, like no, he's good, man. He can spit for sure.
Nice. I'm gonna have to agree. I'm a big Dame fan too. But the fact that Shaq was on this compilation album, I gotta look for that now with all the other bad rappers.
Yeah, I'm sure it's called hip hop, but it's all I think Glenn Rice is on it. It was all basketball players. It was like a compilation full of basketball players rapping.
Wow.
Bad. That's so good.
We need to find that ASAP.
Yeah. I'll make sure Nick will probably do so. Thanks for inspiring me.
Oh, there you go. That's awesome.
Rod, what about you?
I have no, I'll go with AC Cop Out because Dame, I think, has the best bars in the game right now. But I have to respect Shaq because I think he made it cool to have a side gig and for it to be okay for basketball players to say, to go out there and say, like, I want to rap and this is what I like doing because I have other interests. So it's an honorable mention.
And one thing about Shaq too, when he did it, like you could argue the quality, but he had like the biggest names in hip hop rapping alongside him. And that's not a knock on Dame, but like if Dame came out with an album with all the biggest guys, that would be even crazier too, right?
That's true.
All right, next one. Best game announcer in basketball. And this, you know, timeless, so ever can be someone now or someone that has retired.
I have to give a shout out to Matt Devlin, of course, obviously. Yeah. I like Kevin Harlan, man. Like,
oh, he
he has some expressions that are just crazy sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, and of course, like to me, the most iconic one is with no regard for human life when LeBron does. Like, he just says the craziest stuff. So, I like Harlan.
Oh man, I'm gonna go with I like Hubie Brown.
Ooh, Hubie is so good.
He just knows the game so well, good. And he's just so calm and
And you see right here, you see, yeah, dude, Hubie's dope.
Oh. I'm gonna go with I decided to go with my old soul here and go with Chick Hearn.
Okay.
I mean, the guys that you guys mentioned, I mean Matt Devlin, Harlan was my number one pick, so I'm deciding to go with something different. But I mean, just tell me that. You know, the game's in the refrigerator, the door is closed, lights out, the eggs are cooling, the butter's getting hot, and the jello's jiggling.
I mean, yeah.
There you go. That was my really bad Chick Hearn impersonation. But
honorable mention.
Yeah, hearing that on old VHS tapes, I got goosebumps. I'm like, I have no idea what a lot of those, I mean, this is a very young Rod, when still learning a lot of basketball terms. I'm like, I have no idea what half of those things meant, but it sounds cool.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Speaking of basketball terms, I remember learning some things from being from Pacific Northwest out here, the Kevin Calabro, I think that's his name. He does like Seattle back in the day, and now he's doing, you know, the Blazers, right? So definitely a fan of his.
Yeah.
Cool, man. So is there the best team, in your opinion, in the NBA ever?
Like ever?
Ever to you.
Wow.
I know you mentioned the Lake Show earlier.
Yeah, the Lake Show, but man, like, I think it's got to be like this. I mean, this Last Dance crew, man. Like Jordan at his best, Pippen at his best, Rod. Like and like they had the pieces, man. I think it's like it's those guys, man. And then Jordan, like, yeah, it's that Bulls run. I think so. Sorry, I'm not rapid firing, but yeah. What do you got, Evans?
Oh, it's funny that you call them the Last Dance crew, though. We have to coin that one now. That era of the Bulls, because I would actually, I would say it's them too. Just growing up in the '90s, seeing them going in the playoffs all the time, winning it all, and beating, you know, our sort of home team in Seattle.
Right.
I was kind of like, oh man, but yeah, they were that good. They had the right combo, Phil Jackson and everyone. So Steve Kerr, so they were good.
I'm gonna play Homer here and I'm going to go with the three-peat Lakers from the 2000s. So Shaq, Kobe, Fisher, Fox. There was something about that team where Shaq and Kobe decided to play nice with each other. That 1-2 combo was just unstoppable. I've always said that to me, there's, you know, the organization and the players make it greater. And so what I'm trying to say is that I don't think there was ever an explosive or any way to stop the most dominant center ever. And then someone with the determination of Kobe Bryant, it's just, if Shaq was having a bad game, Kobe would pick it up. If Kobe was having a bad game, Shaq would pick it up. And you had guys that were not ball dominant and they knew the role. So I'm thinking about the unsung hero of Derek Fisher, you know, Rick Fox, guys that knew what was the role and they were not only okay with it, but they embraced it and they kept Shaq and Kobe on check as well.
Yeah, I think if you look at any like elite team or teams we're talking about, role definition is key because you have to understand where you fit in and what your role is and not want to do more. And I think that's kind of what separates like great teams from like the best teams, right?
Yeah. But I mean, if I were to put money into it, yeah, I think maybe I would side with Michael Jordan just to be safe.
Hey, it's our opinions, man. Like, that doesn't necessarily mean it's right.
That's true. All right, last one here. And we saved the best one for last. LeBron or Jordan?
Jordan.
That was
great. And it's funny because, yeah, but you know what? It's like, if you asked me that question 3 months ago, I'd be like, oh, you know, I would do – because I think that, like, I saw Jordan, but I think being reminded now, like, all the stuff of Last Dance, it reminds you, like, why he was so great. But I think the stuff that LeBron's been able to do so consistently for so long in different situations, it's too early to call him the GOAT. But I think when it's all said and done, he probably will be. But there was a point where you weren't even – considering LeBron the GOAT conversation, and that changed, that where you actually would consider it. And I think the fact that you would consider it, like the fact that it's a question, before that was even a question, right? Like,
yeah,
right? You would never, like, if you ask that question, you'd be like, how could you even compare the two? But the fact that it's a question says something about LeBron.
Evs, what do you think?
I mean, they're both the GOATs of their era, so it's really tough call. And
No,
you can't do that.
Yeah, no.
It's okay to say LeBron's the GOAT of his era, but... So Michael is just a GOAT of his era. That's it.
Oh man, I mean, a lot of it, like you pointed out, just the way, you know, Jordan dominated his era. LeBron's doing his thing now, but growing up, it was all Jordan. So I'm gonna stick with that.
I'm ready to say that it's LeBron, not to undermine anything that Jordan did for the game. It's definitely recency bias. I wasn't lucky enough to watch Jordan play while he was doing his thing. So now with having the Last Dance, I'm even double guessing myself because now I understand what other people, like why there's adoration and cult behind Michael Jordan. And after seeing even the first two episodes, I changed my mind. I was like, I don't know, there will be a cult for LeBron. There is, you know, there's people that think that he's the GOAT but there's people like me that maybe didn't really were deep into the Jordan craziness and how much he dominated basketball.
The thing about LeBron, though, it's like, and it's unfortunate with the season, like he's still going. I mean, like he was having an incredible season, like right now, it's season 17.
Yeah.
So there's still more left, right? So I think it's too early to say like he's still playing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, please. Then let it be. There be more, at least for. While he's wearing the purple and gold, I'm happy for him to have a lot more.
Can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
Do you guys think there's going to be a season? Do you think they're going to finish this year?
No.
I think there will be something made up. Like I think Adam Silver is just waiting, has, you know, scenario A, B, C through X probably. And just when everything's ready to go, just say, you know, we're going to go into playoffs right away and everyone get their shit together in the next 2 weeks. But I think they're going to have a champion, and it'll be the biggest asterisk in the history of NBA, this championship.
Even bigger than the lockout year, you think, right?
I think so. I mean, even with lockout, at least you had around 50 games to decide who was a better team.
But they've got more than 50 games right now.
Yeah, but like, I mean,
I mean, they never didn't stop in the middle of the season. Like, granted, of course.
Yeah, and there were so many questions that were unanswered about, you know, before going to the playoffs, like, you know, the Clippers' chemistry, the Sixers were, you know, injured basically their starting five, and now they all come back full strength, but sort of out of rhythm. Same, LeBron was, you know, I'm sure his body doesn't mind the rest, but maybe he was going at a tempo where it was working for him. So, and the looming question about Anthony Davis, is he going to stick with the Lakers or is he going to maybe mail it in and go to Chicago? But I think the NBA, and just to please the fans even, and to get some sort of, from a business perspective, to have a little bit of revenue coming back and get their things going for next season, there will be, I don't know if they'll make it a horse tournament or whatever, but there will be a champion.
Yeah, I hope so. I think we all missed the game, right? Yeah. We want it back bad, so.
Yeah, that's me clinging to the idea that I want to see some basketball still.
Me too.
Before we sign off, and thank you so much for your time, would you mind once again sharing with everyone listening where to check out everything on your latest projects?
Sure. You can follow me at Dwayne Watson on Instagram and Twitter. Neek is obviously the best social media platform that exists. No, I'm just kidding. But with myself and Craig Caucasian at That Neek Life. It's NIQUE. You know, playbook for hoop culture, man. I mean, like art, memes, videos, throwbacks, design, photography, anything you want to consume basketball. That's it. And we have a newsletter which comes out every 2 weeks, so I'm definitely subscribe to that. When the season comes back, I am producing for NBA TV as well, for NBXL. And I'm also the co-host of Raps and Publish, the official Raptors podcast, which you can find wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm also the host for Raptors Nightcap, which is the Raptors post-game show live on the Raptors Twitter account. And I'm the commissioner of Crown League. And the problem with this stuff is there's so many things. But
this
definitely,
is your space. Take it away, please.
I know. Hoop Club's on hold. We didn't talk about it, which is cool, but Hoop Club's kind of like on hold right now. I think like I'm just a dude that loves the game, man, and wants to share stories and talk about it, much like you guys do. So I really appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk my talk, man. It means a lot. I respect what you guys are doing for the game too, man. Like,
thank you.
I did my thing, but other guys got to kind of do their thing. And I mean, especially out West too, right? I mean, you guys don't have a team, so it's even tougher for you. Not tougher for you, but like tough in the sense of like having a team and not having a team anymore.
Yeah.
Because like, I'm literally at the point where I'm taking NBA basketball for granted, right? Like,
right.
You know, I wrote it, I was around a championship, right? So like, yeah, so I can appreciate what you guys got.
Dwayne, thank you again for being on the show. And for everything you do, really, because it is people like you and like Craig that keep basketball communities well and alive, especially during these times. We really look up to you and everything you've done and your passion for this beautiful game. And once again, thank you for bringing us all these fantastic stories and content and everything that you just shared with us. We truly appreciate it. And
can I add one more?
Absolutely.
Evan, so hey. Like 2016... NBA Canada series is happening, right? So NBA is playing, Mike Bibby comes back to Vancouver, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with NBA TV, we're doing the hangout across the country at different games, whatever. So I'm with Akil Augustine, who you guys know.
Yeah.
And we're in Foot Locker, and this guy comes up to me and he goes, "Yo, are you Dwayne Watson?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And Akil hears it. Akil's like, "Who the hell knows who you are?" Right? And he's like, "Can I have a picture with you?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure, no problem, man." Like, I felt like, wow, like, someone knows who I am. I felt like amazing. And Akil's like,
awesome.
"How do you know? No one's coming up asking for a picture. How do people know you?" And it was Rodrigo.
Oh, man.
It was so crazy.
True fan.
Dude.
That's awesome. Full circle, man. Four years later, here we are.
It truly is full circle, yeah. No, and thank you again. It was. You made my day. That I mean, there was something about meeting Mike Bibby, but then I was like, "Oh my God, it's Dwayne Watson!" That's
which here. Sounds hilarious to me. But like, you know, when we kind of talk about all the stuff I've done,
hey, we're talking about that's all awesome. Stuff I've done,
and like, you know, like if it's inspired you guys to do what you do in any way, shape, or form at all, or even just like seeing that other people can do it, like that's fantastic, man. Like, you know, it means a lot to me because you know, like, there's room for everybody at the table to kind of do their thing. So that's like, awesome. Yeah, and like. if there's anything I can do to help you guys out or anything you need, let me know, man. I got you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're always going to be part of the Dropping Dimes family. This is your space, and you're always going to be welcome on the show.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you guys a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Make sure that you follow @ThatNickLife. Make sure that you subscribe to their newsletter. Follow Dwayne. Follow Craig. And make sure that you give us a nice rating over there wherever you listen to your podcast. On behalf of Evans, this is Dropping Dimes crew signing off. Peace out.
See you then.